Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi, Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Daled. We begin 8 lines off the top of the Amud with a story about Rabbi Akiva, Ikla LeGinzak, who paid a visit to the town of Ginzak. Now, interestingly, Rashi in Maseches Tanis, Daf Yud Aleph writes, it could not have been Rabbi Akiva because Chas v'Sholem Rabbi Akiva would have been unsure on how to answer these questions. Rather, he says it was Mar Ukva, who was presented with these three questions by the local townspeople in Ginzak. Okay, so the Rav comes to town, a rare opportunity, let's pepper him with questions. Bo Minei, first question they asked him was something with respect to the halacha of a fast day. Hilchas Tanis. So typically, a fast day encompasses the full day. Can a person make a half day? Mis Anan L'Shoyes, can a person establish a Tanis on only half the day? L'Shoyes, a couple hours. Oy Ein Mis Anan L'Shoyes, or perhaps that doesn't work. Now, Rashi and Tosis explain. What happened was, this fellow skipped his breakfast, it's early afternoon, he realizes, hey, you know what? I haven't yet eaten today. May as well turn this into a fast day. He wanted a fast. He wants to, you know, be mechaper on something. And actually, Tosis learns that he had to have been mechabel this on the previous day during mincha time. Right? That's the halacha. You have to be mechabel tanis. But the kabbalah was sort of on condition. Tomorrow. I will have not eaten, you know, by afternoon, I'll turn it into a fast day. So he wasn't really firmly committed to it. It was, you know, on the chance. And now it is early afternoon. He'd like to turn this into a fast day. So again, he had not eaten since morning, right? A whole day he hadn't eaten anything. So technically, it's a fast day. But, as Rashi explains, what was lacking, it wasn't l'shem tanis. He happened not to taste anything today, but not for the sake of tanis. And now he wants to sort of convert it into a fast day. But it's already halfway done. It's only l'shoyes. It's only a couple hours left to the day. Does it work or not? Well, yahava b'yadi. He didn't have an answer. Next question, which pertains to Maseches Avodah Zarah. A yayin nesach question. Kan kanim shlevet kichav. You have these geisha containers used for wine. Okay, so these clay bottles, asurin or mutarin, can we use it for kosher or not? Liyav Abiyad, he didn't have an answer. Next question. B'meshimesh Moshe kol shiva simei miluim. So we know that during the, after the 7 days of the miluim, where they inaugurated, you know, the Mishkan, in the Midbar, with the Karbanos and Avodah, after it was done, who took over the Avodah, who served in the Mishkan? Aaron HaKohen and his children, right? What happened all throughout the 7 days of Miluim? So we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who did it. He did the Karbanos. He taught Aaron, right? But he did not have a status of a Kohen. So he could not wear the special begotten that a Kohen wears. That's exclusive for the Kohen. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was like a czar, says Rashi, like a stranger with respect to Big Day Kehuna. So, although there was Apia Dibur Shimesh, says Rashi, he served, he did the Avodah by way of Hashem's, you know, specific instructions, but there's no mention of what he wore. There's no mention that he wore the Kayan's begotten. So what did he wear? He couldn't wear just plain, you know, clothing. That certainly would not be appropriate. What was he wearing during those days? Again, he was sort of stumped. He didn't have an answer. Okay, when he left town, he came back to the yeshiva, to the kollel. He came to ask in the base medrash. And he presented those three questions. And the responses were as follows. Amri said the answer like this. First question, Hilchasa, yeah, Ms. Anan L'Shoyes, one can make this partial fast day. And in fact, if he completes it successfully, If he fasts till the end of the day, mispal tefillas tana. So if he intends on finishing, completing, that day is deemed a real fast day, which entitles him to do the special tefillah that we daven on a fast day. That's the anenu tefillah and mincha. And he's credited as having fasted. Okay, next question. Regarding those containers, v'hilchasa, kankanim, shleib dekichavim. The barrels, these containers, these pitchers used by the goyim for their yayin esach, they're presumed to have absorbed some of that material in the walls of the containers. So you can't just use it for kosher material, for concern that the residue will actually get released into the new content. So you have to let it dry out. La'achar yud beis chodesh mutarim. Sure, if you wait 12 months until everything totally dries up, now you have no yayin esach residue in those kankanim. Now, by the way, that's only one option. The other option would be, like we mentioned yesterday, you can do the 3-day water fill system, where you fill it with water, leave it in there for a full 24 hours, exchange the water, again 24 hours, and likewise the third day. That also has a similar effect. It cleanses it, and you're not concerned anymore. But certainly if you leave it for 12 months, a full year, it's fully dried, fully evaporated, there's no yayin esach issues. Regarding the third question about Moshe Rabbeinu's attire, b'mesh shimesh Moshe shivas me'amiluim, the answer is b'chalak lavan. He didn't wear mundane clothing, nor the special bidei kehuna. He wore a white robe, a specially designed white robe for that purpose. Of kahana masnim b'chalak lavan shein b'imra, it was a white robe without any hems, without any seams. Why? Rashi says, some say the reason is so that he should not be suspected of hiding coins from the Mishkan, in those seams, in those hems. Rashi disagrees. There was no concern because all that donation was already used up for the Mishkan, and he's in the middle of doing the Avodah, serving the Middash. Where is he going to take that money from? There's no money lying around. So that could not be the reason. Tosis gives another reason. He says, B'shem Rav Moshe Piresh, he says, because ultimately, in a couple of days' time, there's going to be a rotation. Moshe Rabbeinu will leave the Mishkan to make room for Aaron HaKohen, who's going to be the new Kohen, right? So he said, lest people think, right? Lest people have this misconception that Moshe Rabbeinu was unsuitable, and that's why he had to be, he was deposed. No. They made him this special robe. He says, without a seam, it's less durable, it's less, it's more of a temporary type of thing because it tends to get damaged quickly when it doesn't have, it's just a single weave, doesn't have proper seams, so it gets stretched and damaged quicker and it's not so durable, in which case it will be clear that it was only for temporary use for a couple of days of service. So this way it won't be a knock on Moshe Rabbeinu when he's replaced by Aaron HaKohen. Okay, now let's go back to the Mishnah, Chartanim Vazagim. Shel Oivde Kechavim, so we have Chartanim. These are great materials, so the pits, or the Zagim are the skins used by the Goyim in their winemaking process, so that's filled with the Ayin Esach issues. So we avoid Tanur Rabbanan, HaChartanim Vazagim, Shel Oivde Kechavim, Lachin. Okay, if they're still moist, indicating Ayin Esach content, Asurin. Got to back off. Yevashim, once they're dried, mutarim, you can have them. Because they're just, like just a plain, like wood, It doesn't have any great moisture in there anymore. Hayninu lachen, v'hayninu yevashim. What constitutes moist and what is considered dry? So once again, we have this 12-month formula. I'm going to read the Mishmo, lachen, kol yubeis chedesh, within the first 12 months, it's still deemed moist. With the wine content, yevashim, that's only la'achar after yud beis chodesh. Itma amar rabbi b'chan rabbi yechon k'shein asurin, during that 12-month period when they're off limits, asurin afilu ba'ano, you can't even have ano from it because of the yain, the geisha wine in there. K'shein mutarin, but past 12 months, when they're permissible, you can even eat them. Mutarin afilu b'achila, because there's no issue of kashrus. Amar avzvid, haidur daya de chamra. The armoy, Durdaya says Rashi, the shmarim, the dredges, the lees on the bottom of the barrel of wine. The chamer darmoy, taken out of goyisha wine. So once again, basa tresi achashat the shari after 12 months' time, so they've been dried up and no longer contain yayin esach. So if you take it out and you leave it out for 12 months, it's fully dried, fully evaporated, and you can use it. Amar Rav Chaviva, Brei de Rav, Hani Gulfi. So these are, again, these pitchers or containers used for Yayin Esach. Bosa, Tresi Yachashat Shari, waited out for 12 months, and they're okay. Amar Rav Chaviva, Hani Avta de Tayi, Rashi says, Avta is a chemes, a leather pouch made from Me'ir'a, very thick leather. And it's made for traveling, so the travelers will take it along as like a canteen filled with wine. So again, basa trace avta the tayi. These are the travelers. Basa trace yachashat shari. They're okay after 12 months. Amar b'acha b'ed Rav Yehuda, hani pritzani darmoi. So these are the grape pits or some sort of grape residue used by the goyim during their winemaking thing. So the pritzani darmoi of the goyim basa trace yachashat shari. They're kosher after 12 months. Amar Rav Acha b'Rav Rava, Hani Gufi Shchimi v'Uchmi. So these are these clay containers. Shchimi are the reddish ones, and v'Uchmi are the blackish ones, different color, different type of clay, which have absorbed Yayin Esach. If you leave it out for 12 months, Basa Treisa Yachi Shata Shari, after 12 months, they're deemed permissible because they're free of any residue which had already dried up and evaporated. Okay, so it's pretty much a recurring thing. The 12 months does the trick. V'amurius. Okay, so now we'll go back to the murius item mentioned in the Mishnah, which is considered usur. Murius is that fish juice, fish sauce. Rashi says they would make it from fish fat. Okay, now Rashi adds that they would actually recycle. They would take the fat, pour water on it, and drain it out. That would be like the most concentrated. And then they would do it again, repeat the process, a second time, a third time. The third time obviously was the most watery of all three. And Rashi adds that they wouldn't make this from non-kosher fish. Interestingly, they wouldn't make it from non-kosher fish. It doesn't explain why, but Muki Yosef says because it wouldn't have a long shelf life. So even the goyim make their murias from kosher fish only. And typically, there's no concern about pouring in additives like wine because that would just spoil it. It would shorten its shelf life. So typically, it was pristine, pure kosher fish sauce. But as the Gemara will tell us, Tana Rabbanan Murias Uman Mutar. That's only because it was produced by an Uman, by an expert, by a factory with a reputation to uphold. So they wouldn't play games. They wouldn't stick in wine to substitute for the more expensive a fish sauce, because like we said, it would ruin it. It would spoil it quicker, and it would ruin his reputation. It would ruin his business. So if it's produced by an uman, you're good. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gamliel, Eimer b'Shmuel b'Chanan ben Gamliel, Af chilak uman mutar. Chilak is a small type of fish, a mini fish, which, as Rashi explains, although currently it doesn't really exhibit kosher signs, doesn't have the fins and scales, but it's going to develop it when it grows up, and that's okay. That's sufficient to deem it kosher, even though currently it doesn't have those signs. That's based on the Gemara and the Chulin. He says even if it's only slated to feature those things later on in its life cycle, that's okay. Problem is that they would catch it together with non-kosher, mini non-kosher fish, and they were very, very, very similar looking. Was hardly discernible. You could barely differentiate between one and the other. So if you buy from a plain guy in the street, you never know what's what. But from an uman who has to vouch for his product, and Rashi adds that the non-kosher variety, which looks similar to the kosher variety, actually ruins it because he says it doesn't taste as good or whatever, so he wouldn't risk his business by allowing the other thing to mix in. So if you're buying this chiluk fish from a guy who's an uman, who's a merchant, then you're sure you're getting kosher stuff. Af chiluk uman mutar. Okay, now let's go back to the murias for a minute. Tony avimi, braid rabavo. He came and he taught us like this. Murias, uman is mutter, right? Like we said before. Hu tanila. So Avimi, who presented this halacha, he went a step further to explain it. Vu amran explained it like this. It's limited. This heter is limited to pam rishon v'sheni mutter. So as explained before, the first and second, treatment, right? The first batch of sauce extracted from the shuman, and the second batch as well, which is high quality, fully concentrated, fish sauce. He wouldn't dare stick the wine in there. Therefore, you mutter to drink it because it's deemed kosher. But shlishi aser. But if it's the third recycling, then you have a concern. Even if you buy from an uman, you know why? My time. What's the difference between the third and the other ones? Pam rishon v'sheni, the first and second batches, the nafish shumnaya, which are properly saturated with that fish material. So leit zarech, or there's a girsa leit arech, he doesn't need, and it would actually be counterproductive. Lirmir mubu chamra, to add some wine, into that stuff. He wouldn't do that. It's going to spoil his product. Mekan ve'elach roma buchamra, we're past that second point. So the third batch is a little bit watered down already. So now he perhaps sees a need to add some additives like wine, which will enhance its flavor. So there you have a concern, even if you buy from an uman. Continues more with this story. Hahu arba, there was this ship that was filled with fish sauce. Hahu arba de muryasa, which came to deliver muryas, it arrived at the port, at the nomel of the town of Akui. And again, it was produced by a guy somewhere in China. Okay? So, is it okay or not? So Rabbi Abba from that town of Akui, in order to make it certified Murias, he appointed somebody to guard the shipment. From that point onward, to ensure no tinkering, no tampering, no foul play. So you establish Naturi Bados, some people to watch it, right? So this fellow would keep an eye on the shipment. And this way it was mutter for consumption. Amalei Rava asked him, well, that's only good from today onward. What happened until now? For the last 2 months that it was on the, on the ship, that it was on the road, Adoid until today, Manatra, who kept an eye on the Murias? What good is it to start our Hashkacha today if it's been produced a year ago, somewhere in Ekveld? Amarle, he says, no, Ada Idna, until this point, there's no concerns. Lamai Nechoshla, why would we have any concerns? Look, Imshum da Aver Bechamra, now, obviously we're speaking that perhaps it wasn't made by an Uman, so there's no issue of upholding reputation, so actually there would be a concern of wine mixing. Or, as Mepharshim explained, perhaps we're speaking about that third batch. So they saw it was already, a little bit more watery. It was considered shlishi. So theoretically, there would be reason, right? The guy would be motivated to mix in some wine. But in this case, it's different. Imishum dema'ari b'maya. Are we concerned that somebody mixed some wine into this Murias material? It's unlikely. You know why? It's not financially viable to do so in this case. Because Kisisa is a certain amount, like a gallon, right? A gallon of the Murias Beluma costs a dollar. Kisa the Chamra, but a gallon of wine is way more expensive. Why in the world would he put a more expensive additive into the Murias? Kisa the Chamra B'dal Lumi costs $4 a gallon. So he wouldn't do that. So since it's not financially viable for him to do so, we have no concern. Amalei Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabbi Zeira. Okay, that's good because in China it's not worthwhile, but this ship has traveled the high seas. You never know where it called port. Perhaps it stopped off in a place where wine was cheap. Duma I did the Tsur Asu. Maybe the ship came, they brought it through the area called Tsur on the coast of Lebanon, right? The town of Tsur. Asu the Shavi Chamra. Perhaps wine is cheap there, right? So since the wine in Tsur is dirt cheap, they seized the opportunity and they poured some wine, some local wine, into the Murias to enhance it, to increase the quantity, right? Homerlis, he says, awesome, over there at the Tsur area, Ikuli, there are these rapids, Pshuri, snow melt, Ika, which makes it, it's not really navigable. The ship couldn't get to the port at that time of the year, whatever it is, it was not practical. So there's no concern that he called port at Tsur, in which case we have to look at the port of origin. So in China, you know, like we said, the wine costs way more, so it's not unlikely that he would have, right? And locally, we have, he's under guard. So it's kosher for consumption. Okay, so again, the Murius issue is due to a chance that he may have mixed some non-kosher wine into that Murius, but if it's purchased from an Uman, and it's the first or second batches, there's no concern about the wine being added. And even otherwise, if we know that it wasn't financially viable for him to do so, then it's safe to assume that it's kosher material. Okay, the next item is the other cheeses. So cheese is produced in the town of Beis Unyaiki. What are their status? So we have a machlek. It's going to Rav Meir. Not only is it asur ba'achila, it's even asur ba'hano. He can't have any benefit. He can't sell it. No hano. Why? We'll see in a minute. Whereas according to Rabbanon, it's asur, but it's limited to achila. You could have hano, but you can't eat it. So first we focus on Rav Meir's shita, that it's asur even ba'hano. Omar Rav Shimon Lakish mipnei ma. Why? Why is that so? That Rav Meir forbade even ba'hano. Asur gvinas unaiki. Why were they banned? And the answer is, Mipnei, Sheroiv Agolam, Shaloi So'ir, because in this town, most of the local calves were Nishchaten, Labetz Gechavim, were slaughtered in honor of the idols, in which case, basically they would take the rennet, right, from the stomach of the animal, use it as a curdling agent to produce this cheese. Now Rashi points out, very important, Rashi points out, that there's no concern about non-kosher milk being used in this process. Reason being that, interestingly enough, chalav tameh, chalav from a non-kosher animal, eino yoimet. Eino yoimet. Kolema, says Rashi, this is three lines, four lines on the bottom, kolema eino nikfis. It can't, it doesn't curdle, it doesn't harden. So Hashem made it. So when you have cheese, you know it certainly was produced using kosher milk, kosher animal. Problem is the curdling agent. What hardens it? What makes it hard? You need some sort of real strong acidic agent. Typically they use rennet. Today they use all kinds of artificial rennet, but in the olden days they would use natural rennet from an animal's stomach, these types of enzymes that he has there, which when put into milk, curdles it and hardens it, turns it into cheese. And problem is they use the rennet from the Avodah Zarah calves. Avodah Zarah calf is Asur Bahano. Because as we learned earlier, something offered to Avodah Zarah, Takrevis Avodah Zarah, is also even Bahano. And that explains why those cheeses are Asr. Asks the Gemara, why do you have to say most of the Agolim? My Yeri Arayv, forget about most, Agolim, Afilu Miyut Nami, even if it would only be a minority. It would also pose a problem. You know why? Because we are going like Reb Meir, and Reb Meir throughout Shas is concerned even about a miut. Even a minority poses a concern. The Harav Meir chayish lemiuta. Rashi brings in the case of the Yivam, right? If a person passes away without any children, so his wife is Yivama, so the deceased brother does Yivam, and if he's a katan, you can't proceed because maybe he's not really able to have children, in which case he's not qualified for Yivam, although how likely is it to find somebody who's a saris, right, unable to bear children? Reb Meir is concerned even about a miut, a small percentage. So back to our discussion. Even if it's a small percentage of those calves in town, which are used for Avodah Zarah, that's enough to pose a concern. So why do you have to say it's roiv? Answers the Gemara, but look, yeah, those are the calves. What about sheep and goats and all the other animals? Right? So in the total picture, in total sum total, you have many more that are not offered to Avodah Zarah. Apparently they would only use calves to Avodah Zarah. So if you're going to say it's only a small percentage of the calves, well, when you add, you know, most of the calves, they're not problematic. And you have the sheep and the goats, and you're talking about a minute percentage, even Rame would not be concerned about a minute percentage. So the only way we really have a concern is if you say that apparently most of the calves in that town were destined to Avodah Zarah. So although when you add the other animals as well, the other species like the, you know, the sheep and the goats and all that, nevertheless you'll end up with a substantial minority of problematic animals, which is sufficient to pose a problem according to Rav Meir. Right? So Yamris Roiv, if you tell me most of the agolim are Avodah Zarah, ikamiut. So even when you add the other species, other types of animals, which are not Avodah Zarah, but at least you'll end up with a sizable minority in terms of the sum total amount. Ella i'amras miut, but if it's only a miut, a minority, a small percentage of the calves to begin with, which are for Avodah Zarah, so then when you go and you add the majority of the agolim, which are not problematic, plus the rams and the sheep and the goats, kivin dikaroiv agolim, dein nishchotin. First of all, you have most calves which are not slaughtered by the Zohar. And then you have the other types of animals as well, which are not problematic. V'kanamishar behemes, which are not, de'ein nishchat, which are not offered to Rabbi the Zohar. Then you end up with a really negligible minority. Heavily mi'ut of the mi'ut, it's called a mi'ut of a mi'ut, a little of a little, it's a teeny amount. And even a mayor would not be concerned with that. U'mi'ut of the mi'ut, when it's a negligible minority, loy chayish Rav Meir, even Rav Meir doesn't pose a concern, doesn't have a concern with that, so therefore the cheeses would be okay, if not for the fact that it's really a roiv, majority of calves, which have this issue, in which case, although in the sum total of the full picture in town, they only amount to a minority, nevertheless, going to Rav Meir, chayish Rav Meir, we're concerned that he might bump into a problematic block of cheese. Amalei Rab Shimon Bar Yochim, little Rab Shimon Ben Lakish. He says to Rab Shlakish, I have a question. What's the problem? A shecht, Favay Dezara? Well, typically, the shechita is just sort of a preparatory act to prepare the animal for, you know, to get its blood out, to do the Zrika Travay Dezara. Typically, the Shechita itself is not the end game. It's just preparing the blood for Zrika Travay Dezara. So why is the Shechita itself going to make this calf Aser? Kinishchotin, even when they do slaughter it for the sake of Lavay Dezkechav, my Havi, what's the harm? V'atu Deshari, you yourself, he's speaking to Pshim Malakas, you yourself indicated elsewhere that doing this type of act would not make the animal usher. The itma, we have a discussion, machlekes, hashoychet asa behema lizrik dama lavetz kechav. So he takes an animal, does a shechita, in order to prepare for the dam to be used, to be zerik it, to apply it, to the altar of the vidizor. Or lahaktir chelba, lavedis kechavim, or slaughtering in order to prepare the fat to be offered to Avodah Zarah. So it's not the shechita per se that's considered the actual act of offering; it's just preparing it for the other. Rabbi Yechon Amar Asura, he says the shechita is enough to make it asur. Why? Because Savar he holds mechashvin mavoda lavoda, since the act of slaughter was done with the intent to prepare it, to prepare the blood, to prepare the chela for Zrika. So the act of shechita is already deemed an initiation. It's considered the start of that sort of offering process, the Avodah Zarah process, and it's already asur b'hano. It's already considered takreves Avodah Zarah. V'alfinun chutz mipnim. How do we know this? From the halachas that pertain bifnim, lahavdil in the Beis HaMikdash, where there as well, if you do the shechita an animal, and you make pigle, right? You shech the animal, and you think, okay, I'm shechting so that I can take the blood and, you know, wait a week to do the zrika, or wait a week to eat the flesh. So even though he's not really doing much at the point of shechita, it's just preparing for something inappropriate, it already casts a status, a problematic status on this animal. It's already considered pigel. It already disqualifies it from further hakrava. Likewise, by the Zar, lahavdol. Although the shechita itself is not the end goal, It's just a preparatory act for the subsequent acts of service to Avodah Zarah. Nevertheless, it already attains the status of Avodah Zarah right now, and therefore it's Asr. But that's only Rabbi Yochanan's Shita. But Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Amar, he says Muteres. At this early stage, it's still Muter. It's still premature. He hadn't yet carried out his intentions. He hadn't yet implemented his service to Avodah Zarah. So back to our story. Cheeses are Asr because of the rennet content which comes from Egli Avodah Zarah, which are merely slaughtered for Avodah Zarah. So they slaughter it and pull out the rennet. At this point, it's not yet. Takrevis Avodah Zarah. So that was the question he asked Rav Shimon ben Lakish. Because if you realize, Rav Shimon ben Lakish was the one who gave us the reason to begin with. He says it's because of the calves. Well, according to you, the Shechita doesn't yet make it Asr. Amrle, so Rav Shimon ben Lakish responded, first he complimented him, and then came the response. Amrle, he says, Terminach Shatach. Rashi says, Yorum Mazlcha, your Shah, your hour, your Mazl, your good fortune should be raised. You should have success. He gave him a bracha. And then he says, by the way, I have an answer to your question. Boimer was speaking that this fellow was thinking, Bigmar Zvichu Oivda, that I am doing Avoida to Avodah Zarah through the act of Shechita per se. So once he specifies that it's a Shechita that's going to be considered serving Avodah Zarah, then certainly the Shechita makes it Asr. Interesting, the Rashi says, why does he stress that it's at the end of the Shechita, which is Bigmar Zvichu Hu Oivda? Why not just say the Shechita itself? He says, because really there's another Machlaikis. Interesting question. What is considered the act of Shechita? Is it like an incremental act? Every drop is considered another stage in the act of Shechita? So Shechita really begins from that first cut and continues all throughout till the end? Or shall we say, no, the Shechita only sort of gets activated at the end. That's when it becomes Shechita. Everything is just everything else just preparing for the last, which makes the Shechita. So actually, Rav Shimon Lakish holds, that it's only at the end. It's only the last sort of cut that makes the Shechita happen. So that's why he had to specify. Because the Gemar Shechita is what makes it a Shechita. And at that point, he is serving Avodah Zarah. He gave him a bracha before he responded. It reminds me of a story. There was an Alta Yid somewhere in Russia. He was getting really old and he was unwell one day, and they asked him, are you concerned? He says, no, I know I'm going to live a long life. How do you know? He says, how do you know? So he says, because, I'll tell you why. When I was a young little boy, I lived in Vilna, town of Vilna, where the Vilna Gaon lived. And one day, I'm standing on the shul, and suddenly I hear somebody talking. I turn up. It's a Vilna Gaon standing right next to me. Turns out that I was, but mistakenly, I was standing on the on his tzitzis of his talus, which had been on the floor, and my foot was resting on that tzitzis. And the Vilna Gaon turned to me and says, Yingle, little boy, he says, my boy, you should, I'll say it first in Yiddish, he says, Yingle, zost lang leben, ob against that rof game for my tzitzis. He says, my boy, you should live a long life, but can you please go off my tzitzis? I gotta go. So he knows, he says, I know from that utterance, right, that's going to be a bracha, farichas yomim, I'm not concerned at all, and in fact he lived a long life, just from an offhanded comment, so to speak, of the Hilig of Vilna Goyen, a bracha that he gave in order not to make the boy feel bad that he was pushing him off his seat. So before he gave an answer, he says, good question, you should have a bracha, you should have mazel, but the answer is such and such. Okay, so that's with respect to Rav Meir's opinion. Gvina is based in Nike, or also even Bahano, because of the possible Avodah Zarah Renet content. Whereas the Rabbanon limit the ban to only Achila. You could have Hano, it's not so severe, it's only Asr Ba'Achila, Mutter Bahano. And the question now is why? How did they view these cheeses? Amar Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel asked, right, in the Mishnah, why is it Asr? And they went back and forth, as we're going to see. But first, we have an interesting halacha, which seems to be unrelated, but of course it's going to tie into the Mishnah. Amar Rav Achadvay Bar Amar Rav. So he's quoting Rav, HaMekadesh. If one is Mekadesh and Isha, so typically Mekadesh and Isha was something of value, a ring or something. This fellow was sitting out on an island, he had nothing to use for the Kiddushin. He found animal waste, Okay, nothing less, nothing more than animal waste. Hamakadish beperish, that's the animal waste of a shor haniskel. Now, no less than a shor haniskel. So this bull was condemned by the Bezdin because it had attacked somebody, had killed somebody, so the Bezdin condemned him lemisa. He's going to get skila, and it's really now usher bahana, Rashi says. The Torah forbids any ana from this animal. So what about the waste coming from this animal? He uses it for kedushin. Now for kedushin, you got to use your own stuff. It has to be something that you have ownership of, you can use. And in mikudesh, it works. It works. But if he uses the waste of avodah zarah animals, beperish egli avodah kechav, in mikudesh, that doesn't work. Because even the waste coming from avodah zarah is asur b'hanah, and if you can't have hanah, it's not yours. Ownership is only deemed ownership if you can use it, if you can have benefit from it, right? So we have this distinction between perish of shor haniskel, which is mutar bahano, as opposed to perish of an egle avoidis kecham. How do we know this distinction is in fact valid? Either it can be based on logic, or I can prove it from my pasuk. Either it's based on logic. Gabi egle avoidis kecham. You see, in contrast to a shor haniskel, where nobody has any benefit from a bigger animal, a fatter animal, so the perish, the waste, is something separate from the animal. It's not deemed an inherent part of the actual animal. But by the egla v'itzkechem, by the zorah offering, look, the bigger it is, the fatter it is, the plumper it is, the more waste it has inside, right? Nichale benifchei, the fellow offering the animal to the zorah, is very pleased with its plump appearance. So basically, the waste material inside, whether it's the waste or it's the rennet, the cave, or whatever is deemed waste, enhances its look. And therefore, says Rashi, three lines from the bottom, nichale benifchei sheinira shamin. Now it looks nice and plump and fat. It looks like a more generous offering. Lachach chayel shem isr abedis kuchav malah perish. And therefore, the isr, the shame isr of a deserer, is applied to every aspect of this plump-looking animal, even to the waste within it. It's all part of the offering, it's part of the donation, it's an enhancement of the donation experience, and it's considered usr, through and through. As opposed to a shor haniskel, where there's no benefit. Whether it has waste or not, it doesn't help anybody. Aval gabi shor haniskel, l'nichle b'nifche, nobody's interested in the nefach, and enhancement and the plumpness of the animal. So since it's not the actual flesh, it was never banned, it's not usur behana. So that's based on that logical distinction. Now we have psukim as well. Iboyisei makro, we can differentiate based on the psukim, ksiv hacha, because by the avodah zarah it says, don't go near it. Any element of avodah zarah is totally off limits. Lo yidbak b'yadcha mu'uma, nothing. Don't take anything. Rashi says, afilu perish. Even the waste aspect of the animal is off limits. Uksib hasam, as opposed to the shor haniskel, says, shakali shakal ashur, kill the animal. Uleachlas besari, don't eat the flesh. Besari asur, the flesh is asur. Apshir shim muteres. But waste material is okay. Amar Rava says, Rava, look, this ties into our Mishnah. Both aspects of this halach. A, that waste material of a desire animal is asr, and B, waste material of a shor haniskel or any other shor which is asr b'hano, let's say a carbon or whatever, would be okay. Both of these are stated in our Mishnah. Amar Rav Tarvayu, both these halachos taninu were taught in our Mishnah. Tarvayu taninu. Because remember, in response to his question as to why the cheeses were banned, right? So what did he say? Amar le, ipnei shemamidin. Because they produce this cheese using rennet. Keva is the rennet material found inside the fourth stomach of the animal, and they use rennet from a nevela, from a dead animal, which is usher to eat. Likewise, the rennet carries that isser. Okay, and then he responded, v'kumahadar lei, but the other Tana responded, what's the big deal? That's just waste material. It's not affected by the nevela. It doesn't become asr. In fact, I'll prove to you my point. Because the oila in the Beis HaMikdash, it's a carbon. it's more severe in a way than an avela. An avela is only usher to eat, you can have anah from it, but an oila meant for the mizbeach is usher even for anah. And still, the keva of that oila was permissible. In fact, the Mishnah brings that they would allow the kohanim to just swallow them, no problem. Oh, apparently, he was making a point, machlal, the isura anob, chor purushayu, that the perish, the waste material, which was inside an animal, which was asr bahano, like an oila, and like a shahar nisko, would be okay, because it's a separate entity, it's not part of the actual animal. So that's one thing. Okay, so that halacha is pretty clear. Then, in response to this question, what did the Tana say in the Mishnah? In the Karmel, and then he responded from his response, which was, so he sort of switched. He said, okay, the concern is not the Navela, because that wouldn't pose a problem, but rather because they used the keva, the rennet, of egli avedis kechavim from the avedis zara animals. And that explains why the cheeses are asr. And he sort of accepted that. In fact, he even asked, well, if that's the case, then why are we only banning the cheeses from achila? If they've been produced by avedis zara material, avedis zara asr ba'no! And how did he respond? If that's the basis for the Isra, that if it is a remnant, then they should, why did they stop at Achila? They should have made it Asr Bahano as well. So what do we see from this? We see the other point. Mechlal, apparently we see from here, that Avodis Kechavim Asr Perishayu, perish. Remnant or other waste taken out of the Avodis Zara animal is Asr even Bahano. So clearly, both halachas are embedded within this conversation in the Mishnah. Again, two points. Waste material derived from something which is merely, you know, asr bahana, like an oilo or like a shahar niskel, would be okay for us to consume, because typically the waste material is deemed separate from the actual animal, not affected by its status. One exception is avodah zarah, because as we said, it enhances the experience and is covered by the Isra as well. Okay, so that's pretty clear. Okay, one more piece here. So, why did he sort of get, you know, the conversation sort of ended there? Right, when he asked him, well, if it's avodah zarah concerns, then extend the Isra to Hano as well. He didn't respond, he sort of shifted the topic. He started asking about the Shir HaShirim, right? Why don't you just answer like this? You can have a simple answer. Mishum delesa l'isur b'ene. Delesa l'isur b'ene. We don't have the Isra intact. So although the renet theoretically is asr b'hano, but the renet is not here. It's dissolved in the cheese, right? So it's not b'ene. It's not b'ene. It's not tangible. It's not visible. In which case, it loses somewhat of its severity. I'll even prove it to you from the other case of the Mishnah, the homurius. The Rabban's opinion regarding murios, that's the fish sauce, they hold that whenever there's a concern about wine, you know, mixed in, still, the loyasru bahano, although you can't drink it, but you can have anah from it. Why? My time. Although it has, there's a suspicion of yayin esach content, my time. You know why? Lav mishum. Isn't it because the lesed leisur b'einei? Because the isur is not intact, it's been dissolved and mixed in. So it mitigates, the Isra drops down a level, it loses the Isra Anah, and only sticks with Isra Achila here as well. That would explain why the cheese is only Asr to eat, because the Isra is no longer intact. So the answer given to this was like this. No, you can't compare the two things. By cheese, the rennet is deemed intact. What do you mean? I don't see it. It's intact, because its effect is visible. It produced the cheese. The cheese hardened due to the rennet content, so it's visible, it's intact. And therefore, if in fact the source material is asr even bahano, the entire cheese, should get that isra as well. Amri hacha, kivan ukme kol moikim, since the rennet hardens, congeals, curdles the cheese, chashav le, it's considered kaman de isay, it's as though it is li isra, the isra element b'enei, intact, as if it's here in front of you. We have this halacha many times in a different context, something which is a ma'amid, something which is curdles, something which is machamis, which makes it, you know, leaven, which makes it rise, metavel, right, similar halacha, metavel, seasoning, All these things, since they're felt, they're visible, they're tangible in a certain way, you can't just ignore them and do away with them. Okay, so we began with the story, with the three questions, right? And the conclusion was, you can make a tanis shoyis, the kanakanim, which are 12 months, are okay, and Moshe Rabbeinu wore the special chaluk lavan during the Shiva Simeon Eluim. We spoke about aging various yayin nesach materials, past which they're considered mutter. Morias is only concerned if the the context, the circumstance allows for a concern of yayin nesach mixed. Regarding gvinois, according to Rameir, even Asr Bahano, due to the Avodah Zarah rennet mixed in, whereas the Kuntar Chachamim was limited to Isra Achila. We never really got to the bottom of the reason for the Isra of the Gvinois. We spoke about Nevel, we spoke about this, but we hadn't really clarified. We'll get to that Be'ez Hashem tomorrow, and that's very relevant today because we all know that Gvinois, produced by Goyim, are Asr, the Gzera, the Isra applies today, nowadays as well, the reasons of which will be discussed Be'ez Hashem tomorrow. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rav.